Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Oh, America, the butcher's bill is due again. Uh-huh. You know. I know. We know. And thus do we conjugate another day in the American shooting gallery. Mm-hmm. You never know, because freedom, when it's going to be your turn. Today, it was Chattanooga's turn. A few weeks ago, it was Charleston, South Carolina's turn. It's sort of randomly equitable, I suppose, the butcher's bill. Everybody's in the lottery. And you never know whose number's gonna come up. Because freedom. Because Second Amendment. Because the boot heel of government tyranny is on our neck, and we got us to have us the ability to buy us all kind of shooting guns. Because one of these days we may have to rise up against the government. Right? Melon Lave, baby! Wash your melon! Right? Yeah. Yeah, Chattanooga's turn. By the way, I just happened to be in the doctor's office following up on blood work today. Good news. But of course, Fox News, TV, Rwanda was on in the waiting room because all the scared old people who go to the doctor's office, well, they don't have TVs in their home, so they have to come to the clinic to be able to get the bejesus scared out of them by Fox News TV Radio Rwanda. Because nothing says, like, low blood pressure like sitting there watching terrified white people. Oh, and they were pissed off this afternoon. They were pissed. How dare that one in our White House speak to that good God-fearing, upstanding protector of the First Amendment and the Fourth Estate? How dare he speak to Major Garrett like he did? But that soon changed because, and I knew because they ran their really expensive graphics and their crawler was going double quick, and they were playing the really scary martial breaking news music. Yes, indeed, the news changed because, and you know, the Fox Attack Blonde did everything but put one hand over, cupping over one ear. We are receiving word live now from Chattanooga that there's been some kind of shooting. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, the lady ahead of me was rattling her pill bottle and turning it upside down at the counter to show that she was out of pills. Yeah. But the news was breaking, and it did break. And Fox was dutifully reporting all the places that had gone into lockdown thereby. No irony involved here. Lee Highway in the Chattanooga area. And there were lockdowns as far north as Cleveland, Tennessee. Mm-hmm. And we now have some little bit of detail on the presentation of today's Butcher's Bill. In Chattanooga, Tennessee. By the way, this is the Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home. It's 6 minutes past the hour on this, the 16th day of July, 2015. Folks are gathered together over in the chat room. Come on over if you'd like to. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com/chatroom. It's free. It's easy. And it is a real-time multimedia extravaganza during the time that this program is live. Pick yourself out a screen name and a password, and you'll be right into the thick of things. Mm-hmm. We're a listener-supported radio effort. No ads here. No exhortations for you to purchase an herbal remedy that will grow hair on a bowling ball. Mm-mm. No pleas for you to watch a Ron Paul infomercial so that you can learn about the coming grave financial crisis that may change the way we live, travel, work, and play. Mm-mm. Just listener contributions. And we're small potatoes when you get right down to it. We try to raise $200 an evening. Last couple of evenings, not so successful. We've had good help, but not so successful. We have a fundraising goal this evening of $380. 38 people at $10 a piece. 10 people at $38 a piece. People at $19 a piece. And thereafter, however, one at $380. Two at $190. Four at 95. And that's as much math as I can do on the fly. The interface for PayPal is at headonradionetwork.com under the tab Contribute. You can leave the more intrusive questions blank. Just get to the next screen where you make all your PayPal choices. Credit card, PayPal balance, what have you. Oh, yeah, Visa, MasterCard, you name it, they'll take it. Mm-hmm. If you prefer to use the U.S. Postal Service, you can always send checks and money orders to The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, Beckley, WV 25801. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. 9 minutes into the program, and the lead story is still, if it leads, it bleeds. And, yeah, four Marines today, not nine worshipers in an AME church in Charleston. This was four Marines in a recruiting reserve center in the greater Chattanooga area. Apparently, the shooter who has been tentatively identified as Mohammed Yusuf Abdulaziz, was heavily armed. Lots of firepower. According to the FBI special agent in charge, out of Knoxville, Tennessee, Edward Reinhold, Mr. Abdulaziz was, in his words, probably from this area, or at least is residing in this area prior to the event. Hundreds of law enforcement agents will now be detailed to sort out the whos, whys, and wherefores of this today's submission of America's Second Amendment Butcher's Bill. Anytime now, the NRA will be saying, if only the victims had been armed, this might not have happened. Wait, they were members of the Marine Corps. Well, if only they allowed lots of firepower in recruiting stations. It's predictable, isn't it? It's also disgusting. Now, granted, because the man's name was Mohammed Yusuf Abdulaziz, U.S. Attorney for that district of Tennessee, Bill Killian, immediately ran right out and said, this is an act of domestic terrorism. And then somebody, texted him or sent him a message on Facebook or tweeted him or who knows what. But later on, the investigation will determine how the crime should be labeled. Because, see, whenever your shooter's name is Mohammed Yusuf Abdulaziz, it's a no-brainer. It's domestic terrorism. Because, you know, those people are the kind who commit domestic terrorism. Not a wayward lad like Dylan Stormroof, who was just misguided and perhaps deranged. And that's what caused him to go in and slaughter 9 people in the Emmanuel AME Church in Charleston a few weeks back. That's not domestic terrorism. White people are genetically incapable of domestic terrorism. That's why they're white. That's why the white people created the Second Amendment to protect Merca from the government putting its jackbooted heel on our white necks. And back there in the 19th century, so those good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered white people could form up runaway slave hunting posses, gangs, under the color of state law and be thought of as a militia when they went crossing state lines. That way South Carolina wouldn't think Virginia was invading or nothing. They was just hunting for a runaway slave under the Second Amendment. There will be ever so much detail, which we will not get out of this latest incident. Mohammed Yusuf Abdulaziz really did have numerous weapons, and in the words of the New York Times, fired a barrage into the reserve center, photographs showing windows of the site riddled with bullet holes. Mm-hmm. Our good friend David in South Carolina noting, no background checks for gun purchases in Arizona where the shooter lived. Arizona. Riddled with bullet holes. And even though the murderer, for he is a murderer, even though the murderer's name it was Muhammad Yusuf Abdulaziz, I'm willing to bet, guess I guess would be the better word, I'm willing to guess that he didn't have to get any of his weapons from the ISIS rebels who want to destroy America. No word yet from Lindsey Graham. Apparently he's dug a trench underneath the fainting couch. No, I'm sure Mr. Muhammad Yusuf Abdulaziz was able to just walk down to Friendly Fred's Firearm Emporium somewhere in Arizona or Tennessee or any of the states in between and buy pretty much as many firearms as Mr. Muhammad Yusuf Abdulaziz wanted. Because freedom. Because Merca. Because the government's jackbooted heel's gonna be on our neck. Meanwhile, as I sat there waiting for my name to be called in the waiting room of the local medical establishment, I didn't even have to go to the magazine rack. Oh, it was filled with copies of Guns and Ammo and NRA Today and So You've Got a Short Penis, Here's the Gun for You. Didn't even have to go to the magazine rack because as I sat down, right there, someone had kindly left for my reading pleasure a copy of Merkin Rifleman. Right. And it's the May 2015 issue. I tweeted a photograph of the cover earlier today. Merkin Rifleman. The world's oldest and largest firearm authority. And the cover of Merkin Rifleman for the May 2015 issue was a whole bunch of bullets. With right in the middle of it, what appears to be a great big green glob of spooge. And the terrifying headline, if they can ban one, they can ban them all. You know, because that one in our White House is trying to take away all the guns from all the freedom protectors that are going to protect us when the government puts this jackbooted heel down on our freedom-loving necks. To be fair, I have not checked yet to see who the pool winner was on the time check for how long it took Alex Jones to holler, false flag! Or maybe declare that Mr. Abdulaziz Yusuf, or Mr. Muhammad Yusuf Abdulaziz was one of those asexual humanoids he was talking about the other day. Yeah, God only knows where the firearms came from. They could have come, as David in South Carolina notes, from Georgia, who has just eliminated gun laws. The Georgia border's right there at Chattanooga. Mm-hmm. You know it. But there's an angle here. And I will bet you that, I'll bet you that our dear friend Dr. John caught this angle right away. I caught the angle right away. Maybe you did too, as a member of the Horn Family Commune Congregation. It really matters not where the murderer purchased his firearms, because this is a nation that has gone mad with firearms. Truly. Could have been Alabama, could have been Georgia, could have been Tennessee, could have been Arizona, could have been West Virginia, could have been Texas. Just no telling. Right? But sometimes, you know, sometimes we get a giggle out of the goddess of irony. But sometimes, as she observes our stupidity, she feels the necessity to really whack us upside the head real good-like. This is one of those days. Because you might recall, it was last month when we had the story of Robert R. Doggart, aged 63, an ordained minister, who was caught by the FBI planning a terrorist attack on a community in upstate New York called Islamburg. You may recall that he planned to go there and attack a mosque and a school and stores. You may recall that he said that he wanted to be the standoff gunner at 350 yards away and serve as a sniper to murder anyone who tried to resist their attack on Islamburg. You may recall that Mr. Doggart said, "You know, we're going into a combat situation. If it's my life, it serves a purpose for the better good. I'm willing to give it. But I think in a situation like this, it's more important to show them that we are above and beyond way better than our enemy. If we get in there with a 10-man team and take out a 20- to 30-man crack troop, that's going to show them something. Make them think twice about which town, which country, and who the hell they're messing with." That was not Doggart. That was the commander of the organization. After that conversation, Mr. Doggart traveled to where else? South Carolina, to meet with the commander. Doggart appears to claim that he had recruited 9 other people and referred to his group as "this battalion I command." And he got popped. And before you could say what, the U.S. Attorney's Office for whatever that district is of Tennessee had cut him a deal. He was going to, and he did, plead guilty to a single charge. That would have subjected him to no more than 5 years in prison for planning to attack and slaughter innocent American citizens in a little community in New York. American citizens who happened to have converted to Islam and moved out to the country to try to get away from the poverty and the violence of the inner city in New York. You may recall that a couple of weeks ago, the federal judge who was to take his guilty plea threw that guilty plea out because he wasn't sure, and this is the important part, he wasn't sure that plotting to murder and massacre people in a little community in New York and to stand, be a standoff gunner 350 yards away and pour down sniper fire, he wasn't sure if that was a credible threat. So he threw out the plea deal. Yeah. Beautiful, huh? Well, here's where it gets interesting. The same U.S. attorney who tried to cut a sweetheart plea deal for the white 63-year-old minister of Christ's gospel is the same U.S. attorney who ran out today to say, this is clearly an act of domestic terrorism. Mm-hmm. Now, it is the most rank form of speculation, and I'm engaging in it. To wonder if giving that guy a pass might have had something to do with Mohammed Yusuf Abdulaziz's decision there in the very same community. It's hard not to consider. But they won't have any trouble. Well, see, Mr. Killian's not really going to be involved because the shooter's dead. It's just another day when our Second Amendment butcher's bill came due, and the mothers and the fathers and the brothers and the sisters and the aunts and the uncles and the cousins and the friends and the neighbors and the old school chums of the four young Marines who were slaughtered today get to pay it. And my heart breaks for them. It really is kind of hard to smuggle guns from say, ISIS over in what used to be Iraq and Syria here to the United States of America, isn't it? It really is much easier just to walk down to Friendly Fred's Firearm Emporium and buy yourself maybe an AR-15, maybe a couple of high-capacity 19-20-round semi-automatic pistols. A lot easier indeed. It is about half past the first hour of the program. Marty, via email, says, to borrow from Sherlock Holmes, it is hazardous to theorize in advance of the facts. Sadly, we won't be getting any of those, just media-driven hype and hysteria. But you will not hear. I almost guarantee it. You will not hear anywhere else the reminder of the echo of what U.S. Attorney Killian participated in with regard to Robert Daugherty and his plan to commit a slaughter in Islamabad, New York. You won't hear that. But when a federal judge, and by the way, Doggart has since the plea deal was tossed out, the grand jury has heard the case, and they've decided, the grand jury has, that plotting to murder the citizens of Islamabad, New York, wasn't terrorism either. No. No, Robert Doggart and another person, unknown thus far, has been charged instead with solicitation to commit a civil rights violation. Not terrorism, because, of course, he's white. He couldn't possibly commit terrorism. White folks are genetically incapable of committing terrorism, even when they're on horseback in the night and they drag people out of their homes under flaming torches with a cross burning in the background. They're incapable of terrorism. This, by the way, being the birthday of Ida B. Wells, one of the first women of color to stand up against lynching. Also a woman who stood up against a railroad company long before Plessy versus Ferguson. She actually won a $500 judgment against a Tennessee railroad company that had refused her to seat her in her previously purchased first-class seat and instead compelled her to sit back in the colored section, which, by the way, was, while separate, certainly not equal. The trial court awarded her $500. An appeal court later on said,
"Well, heavens to Betsy, no, we can't be given no $500 judgment to no colored woman. Case reversed."
Happy birthday, Ms. Wells. 28 minutes before the hour, and we are joined, as you may have noticed earlier on my Facebook page, we are joined by the one and the only Eric Bjorn, calling from a remote, undisclosed location that somehow or another probably involves sand and drinks mixed in hollowed-out coconut shells with little paper umbrellas in them in South Carolina. Good evening, Eric.
Good evening, Bob. How are you? It's nice to join you with my regular voice.
We don't have to do the Pastor Pillow shtick this evening, so we should be okay.
Yeah, I think I'm about shticked out.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, I had thought it would be valuable since I was gone all of last week. Which included the day that the Confederate treason rag came down in Columbia, South Carolina.
All 52 inches of it.
Yeah. I thought it might be beneficial if we could do a bit of a retrospective, because, as usual, the for-profit media coverage left a little something to be desired. And somehow or another, I wonder if we won't wind up wrapping that into the events of this here given day, what with the butcher's bill coming due in Chattanooga.
Yeah, it's been rarely, Bob, does the whirlwind of world history set down in front of your hometown. Essentially in your backyard or your front lawn, but it did. I remember being in Haiti when Papa Doc left, and I remember that whirlwind, but I was only 14 then. I'm a little older and wiser now. These past few weeks have been extraordinary, and as a resident of Columbia, I have been at times simply agog at the level of misinformation spewed out by the likes of even CNN or BBC, clearly having not done even their basic geographical history. I think this would be a really good opportunity for us to kind of even walk through the timeline. I don't think anybody out there has done that at all, and accurately at that.
Well, there is that whole accuracy thing now, isn't there?
Let's get a transcript of this conversation, get that out to a couple of important archives for the future.
Right, Rush transcript.
So that so that people actually know that Charleston is not the capital of South Carolina.
Well, that was the beginning. No, Charleston is the capital of West Virginia. Damn it, not South Carolina. We get a little testy.
I used to live up that way as well. Yeah, after 150 years, you think people would get that right. It's its own little state now.
Yes, we are. We're our own little toxic state. And you have wildly different topography down there than what we have up here. And well, nobody's setting off lots and lots and lots of ammonium nitrate and fuel oil down your way just as a start.
No, they're not.
But Charleston is not the state capital of South Carolina, despite how many different for-profit media outlets reported that. It is, in fact, Columbia, and that's where the flag was, right?
Correct. And for those who don't know, once upon a time, Charleston was actually the capital. Just about as long ago as your state split off from Virginia, Columbia became the capital of South Carolina. Most people would probably think that the Confederate flag is flown atop the South Carolina State House grounds, or the South Carolina State House since the since the Civil War. That's not actually accurate. In fact, back to the Civil War, there was no roof on the State House. The current State House was in the middle of being built during the Civil War, in fact. There was a facade roof, I think a tin roof, just put over it, as irony would have it. As another irony would have it, Bob, I was asked by the South Carolina State Museum just a few months ago to play the part of General Sherman. Columbia is commemorating right now the 150th year anniversary of the burning of Columbia. Not celebrating, but commemorating. So it's been a year of civil war, of memory, of commemoration, of horror.
You can leave the celebrating part to the rest of us who are glad the Union won.
Right. Well, you know, when I committed to take on the part of Sherman and read from his diary at this special anniversary event, the coordinator of the event said, "Oh, really? Thank you so much. We didn't think we'd get anybody to read the part."
Yeah, there's not a town named Sherman, South Carolina, is there?
There surely is not. And I said, "No, I'd be honored. You know, I read your history very much so." And I think we did four readings at night from a variety of different diaries of people from Columbia. And actually, at one point, an audience member stood up and shot me with his finger.
Well, of course. I mean, you know.
History, but I'll just say, you know, even in jest, history runs deep. I was booed every time I was announced to Sherman. I was soundly booed by the crowd. So there's, you know,
well, just remember,
there
are parts of Iran and Pakistan and Afghanistan where they still have holidays every year in which the devil is portrayed in the guise of Alexander the Great.
Right.
So,
well, hey, you have
this kind of stuff runs
button,
deep.
The blue button and the black button almost still cry over the split. You know, I mean, and that's not even a joke. That's true. History runs deep in many communities. All to say, the flag actually did not fly atop the South Carolina State House Dome until, of all years, 1962. And as many are quite aware, it was put atop the dome in commemoration of the 100th year anniversary of the Civil War, but also as a thumbing of nose at the federal government for the Civil Rights Act and movement that was ongoing. A stiff reminder to Uncle Sam that we don't have to do what you want us to do. So it didn't go up until 1962, July 1. And it came down from the State House Dome in 2000, July 1, 2000, following an act. There were a number of rallies, a call for the current governor at the time to bring the flag down from atop the dome, and there was a concession made to do so. In exchange for that, Martin Luther King Jr. holiday was finally put in the calendar, as well as the May 10th Confederate Memorial Day state holiday. The African-American monument was built on the west side of the grounds, And the flag was brought down, but rather than being put in a less prominent place, I would argue it was actually put in a more prominent place. It became the hood ornament on the State House grounds on the north side, right behind the Confederate soldier memorial, which guards it, as some would say, from facing the north-facing Confederate soldier statue. And by all who had to pass by it daily, twice over or more, it was as prominent, if not more prominent, than it had been before, in its new placement in July 2000. So for 15 years, there it flew 52 inches of in-your-face active symbolic racism. I moved down here to Columbia. As irony would have it, Bob, I moved to Columbia the month that the space shuttle Columbia actually blew up. So Columbia. I'll never forget that. But I clearly remember driving by the State House for the first time, completely unaware that the Confederate flag actually flew in South Carolina, and my jaw just dropped. Just weeks later, on Martin Luther King Jr. Day, I drove by the State House and observed a number of men wearing bed sheets on the State House steps. And again, my Minnesota native eyes and brain could not behold what it was witnessing. And I still remember feeling, where have I moved to? What foreign land is this? But I've been here since 2003, 12 years. I'm a father. My daughter was born and is now reared here. She is a native South Carolinian. I have worked hard for the state for many years, and I consider myself solidly a South Carolinian. And after 12 years, passed that flag at least twice a day. Many times walked by it on meetings up to and for various state government proceedings or committee meetings.
And let me ask you.
Absolutely aghast.
I was going to say, did it just sort of, over the course of those 12 years, did it just fade into the background for you? Or was it?
No. I actively worked, at one point I actively worked anonymously for a alt-weekly newspaper. At one point we put the flag on the cover, juxtaposition with Jesus sitting up at it, sitting and staring at it as if, oh my God.
Oh my me.
That was the Columbia City paper, and by far that was the one cover that nobody forgets. You know, if you put your Lord and Savior in front of the active symbol of racism, it's gonna raise a few eyebrows. So no, I don't think there was not one time that I ever passed it that I wasn't disgusted, didn't consider it despicable, wasn't completely conscious of its active symbolism. And many, many times took my daughter down there. We would sit at the top of the 52nd step and look out at all of the symbols before us and discuss them. And I figured, you know, as long as she's pledging allegiance to a flag in the classroom, we need to understand what these flags mean.
Vexillology, isn't that the word?
Vexillology, yes. Yeah, I mean, flags mean something. Symbols mean something. People who say it's just a symbol, that, well, you know what? So it's a stop sign, and yet it has the power to make you stop.
Because it has the force of law behind it.
Right, it has the sense of the community agreeing to what it means. There's no doubt what that symbol means to so many. And anybody can get in their F-350 today and drive all over creation with a flag flying. This isn't Germany. It's not illegal. But it shouldn't be an active symbol of any government, municipal, state, on federal landmarks, etc. It should no longer be an active symbol. My background is archaeology and ancient languages. I deeply revere history. It does belong in the museum. It's an important thing for us to remember. We should never forget, but there's a difference between a retired symbol and an active one. And as we speak, it's now a retired symbol.
Well, it appeared, as I noted on my little travel report Monday evening upon my return from the D.C. area, it appeared to be to have been retired from the gift shop at the Manassas Battlefield. The flag itself, you could buy an American flag, but not a Confederate flag. But there were still the cheap little gray kepi hats with the Confederate flag on top of it. I don't think the boys in Butternut walked into battle with a Chinese-made decal of the Confederate battle flag on top of their little kepi hats, but that's what you get in the gift shop. And
today I saw somebody say, why don't we get rid of the Black Panther flag? You know, we're not getting rid of the Confederate flag, but you know, there is no sense. Well, there is sense in discussing. And trying to attempt to have a reasonable dialogue with people, but they're determined. They're determined on the other side of the coin to think what they think, that their symbol has somehow been, it has been execrated, but it certainly hasn't been made illegal. As in Germany, you cannot fly a Nazi swastika flag. Of course, what they fly instead is a Confederate flag.
Yeah, as a convenient replacement. Yeah, in fact, I play it from time to time. I've got a song by Jason Ringenberg, formerly of Jason and the Scorchers, who was touring Germany one time and saw a Confederate flag flying in central Germany, and was apparently rather horrified by it. But yeah, that's their stand-in. You know, it's
right. It may in fact be your heritage, not a heritage to be proud of. But I think over the course of the past 5 to 6 weeks, as a nation that we engage in this dialogue, I really think the facts have shown through clearly. I think it's now clear to the average person what the Articles of Secession stated. Especially when you go into, say, the state of Mississippi, that says the one absolute primary reason we are doing this, let it make us clear, is slavery, which is the principal industry of the world at the moment. You can't say, based on the Articles of Secession, that it wasn't about slavery, because it in fact was. But I think that's come out pretty clear. Now there are a number of people who will deny that to their dying day and let them do so. But we all understand. And of course, following up a bit on timeline of what, sort of the order of events, there was of course the horrendous June 17th incident of displaying of the 9 innocent in Emmanuel AME Church in Charleston by the person whose name I won't ever mention all the rest of my days. That of course sparked, I think, the dialogue following that incident, when it became so utterly clear that the motivation was racism and expressly to quote unquote incite a race war. Everybody turned their attention to Governor Haley calling for the flag to come down, but it wasn't quite like that.
No.
The people called for it down first. There was a June 20 rally in Saturday at the State House grounds. 3,000 people showed up with tremendous chants of take it down. And it was almost a spontaneous rally. People just showed up and said, get rid of it. 2 days later, there was a noon rally, the same. Noon on a Monday, still over 1,000 people showed up, that's a very hard time to make a political rally. And in the South Carolina heat of all of that. That afternoon, Governor Haley called for the flag to come down. Now, she may have done that on her own, but it was pretty clear the voice of people speaking.
I think, Eric, there's a certain duty that attaches, because a certain segment of the body politic of this country has decided that Nikki Haley has become some sort of transformative person, politician. I think those of us who are based who call home the reality-based community must note that it was a year and a half or so ago that she said, "Why, goodness me, I have no problem with that flag. No business leaders have ever come to me complaining about that flag." Which, of course, means that in her world, the only people she listens to are business leaders.
Well, we'll get to, you know, remind me to circle back on that in a bit, because in the end, an appeal to business people is what saved the day. So, of course, everybody knows that Governor Haley did, in fact, call for the flag to come down. And then a few days later, on June 26th, the funeral of Senator Clemente Pinckney was held, and President Obama sang Amazing Grace, as everyone knows. And at that point, we were all aware that there would be probably a special session. The legislature was already going to have a special session. They had budgetary issues they needed to resolve. So if you're not aware of the South Carolina legislative process, there was already a special session that was very likely. And so it became a grand opportunity then to put the flag debate on the calendar. Then Saturday, June 27th, was the pro-flag rally.
Oh, beautiful. That had to be
that
fun.
Actually, that received probably even more international play, as is wont to do. By
well,
the
sure, because it was a circus atmosphere full of clowns.
Absolutely. Now, well, we had 3,000 and over 1,000 at the Take It Down rallies, respectively. There were all of about 120 people at the Take It Down rally, but, of course, they wore shirts that said secede and had giant Confederate flags with large mouth Bath printed on them.
Really, Billy Bass?
Well, you know, it's hard to tell the difference between a large mouth Bath and a small mouth Bass on the Confederate flag. But
well, you know, that's something that generally only matters to fishermen and other bass.
And I could tell, you know, so that day Annabelle Park, who started the coffee party, a well-known activist out of California, came into town to film, and I got a call at 7 in the morning saying, would you please come down and help? She said, I got to get out of town, and my cameraman needs another. So I got up, and I hadn't planned on going to the pro-flag rally, but I'm certainly glad I did. There was a man who came jogging by, an African-American man. Nobody knew who he was. His name is Jalal Abdul. He had no idea what was happening that day. He was just jogging by, and he saw all these Confederate flags, and he stopped in his truck, and he started to engage the pro-flaggers with the spirit of a Muhammad Ali. I have never seen anybody engage other people. And for so long, he took on people for over an hour, person after person after person. Like, it was amazing. And one of the flags finally let fly what everybody knew they were all thinking, which is, why don't you go back to where you belong? And he said, I am where I belong. This is my home.
Where did they mean?
Yeah, well... At this point, Bob, I'd rather not crawl inside the head of any one of these people.
No, that's kind of my job.
It's mind-boggling racism. It's such an insult to history. But I would say that I was threatened that day. I was helping film. These were active protesters and ralliers. I was told they would break my face. I took their picture again, and then they were an active demonstrator at a political rally.
Although they were of course welcome to put on a hood.
Indeed, one woman I know was threatened to be shot. Police report was fired. Filed. I mean, it was an incendiary group. I really did try to engage a number of the ralliers to try to get them to support positions. It was an almost futile effort. Lots of off-key renditions of Dixie. But, of course, that got large international play. And, you know, all the better, because ignorance was wholly on display that day. Then a few days later, I personally visited Emmanuel AME Church in Charleston. I had been asked to speak at the July 4th rally, which I considered an honor, and I went down to Charleston to pay my respects. And I would encourage anybody that's anywhere near South Carolina now and into the future, because it'll be a memorial forever, to to visit the church. The sign outside the church still reads Clementa, Pinckney, 9:30 a.m. Sunday. People are signing a tree sapling and a fire hydrant of all items outside the church. It's fascinating to watch this sort of banal, profane object become sacred now. People stream by. But you know what really upset me the most, Bob, and I hope somebody comes and covers this. Directly across the street was some sort of a fraternity house or gathering of young white males sitting in lawn chairs on a second story portico, blaring rock music, speaking disrespectfully, laughing, all 30 feet away. 30 feet away, directly across the street from the memorial, from the church. I just put such rampant disrespect, and of course they were stared at. Many people shot them nasty looks. They knew what they were doing. It was upsetting when you just wanted to sit and meditate and cry and have your moment of silence and consider the horror that had happened. But it's molten fresh history. It remains that still. I really do encourage people to go and pay their respects to the 9 victims who are heroes. They were all outstanding members of their community and their state. Their work will never be forgotten. It grieves me that people would pay such disrespect across the street. If ever you needed an example of active racism, go check it out. But then July 4th was the large unity rally on Independence Day. Representative Smith spoke, and he was the first person I've heard called out, not just for the flag to come down, but for the whole flagpole. Because if the flagpole is gone, guess what?
Yeah.
You can't put up a replacement.
Right. which I'm sure that had the flagpole been left there. Have there been any incidents since it did come down, Eric? Have there been any incidents in which people tried to put the flag back somehow?
There have been protesters. You've had your caravans of F-250s driving around with flagpoles, but no, there's no flagpole. Unless somebody wanted to. I guess you'd have to bring your own pole and stand there. And, of course, somewhere in there, Bree Newsom came and took down the flag, which to many was an act of heroism. To others within the state.
Well, let me ask you a quick question, if I may. Who was it that was in charge of actually removing the flag? I saw a bunch of people wearing gray uniforms. Was that the...
Those were state troopers.
Okay, so it was the South Carolina State Police.
Right, and on the day that it finally came down, I don't want to spend too much time talking about Bree Newsom. What she did was brave. However, there was a political process ongoing, and it was a very sensitive process, and it nearly interfered with that. And there are many in South Carolina who wish that it had not happened because it could have derailed very sensitive talks. Because, as you know, there were quite a few members of the House that wanted it to remain up. What she did was brave, and nobody will ever take that away from her. And in some other moment, that act of civil disobedience, was honorable. But so the July 4th rally came. I was honored to, I was asked to speak at that rally too. I talked about, I spoke as a father that day and what it's like to rear a child and have to pass that flag, and my daughter asking me, don't the leaders know? Don't they know what it means? Should we tell them? Really, nobody had spoken much to the subject of children, and I think that's an important subject to consider in all of this. So after the July 4 rally, again, which was very branded, and many had the NAACP spoke, Representative Smith, one of the leaders of the Unitarian Universalist Church in Columbia spoke as well, a number of bands, and it was intended to be a unifying rally. I didn't see a single Confederate flag that day being displayed. It was a wonderful display of...
And people who would like to read the text of your remarks can go to forwardprogressives.com. That's forwardprogressives.com. look up your name, Arik, A-R-I-K, Bjorn, B-J-O-R-N, or look up Future Independence Day Address, People of South Carolina.
Right, yeah. And one of the things I talked about that day was there's an African-American memorial to the east side of the State House grounds. There's a number of bronze statuary in situ moments of slavery, and there's one figure of a slave with a shackle around his wrist and a single link of chain. It's the only thing that moves on the whole giant monument. In fact, other than the flag, it's the only link that moves. It's the only thing that moves at all. What I encourage people to do, in light of the flag hopefully coming down, was to find positive active symbols, and to be moved by history, as indeed that link moves. That's a, if you ever are in the South Carolina State House grounds, find the African American monument, find that link, hold it in your hand. I've been moved by history. But yes, my remarks that they are on forwardprogressives.com. My name is a bit unusual, Arik, A-R-I-K, Bjorn, B-J-O-R-N.
Yeah,
the following days.
Not E, A, A-R-I-K.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, let me know. People say, that's such a wonderful name. You know, I had nothing to do with it.
Absolutely. Let me backtrack a little bit, or maybe it's not backtracking so much as prognosticating. What next? What next for South Carolina? What next for the South? I think you're a little bit more optimistic than I am about that flag, because as I noted on Monday in my show and tell. Well, okay, it was all tell, no show. But in the course of driving to D.C., I saw an endless display of that filthy banner. And I saw, yes, those F-250s, F-150s, Dodges, Chevys, Jeeps, what have you, with their, now I gotta admit, I didn't see a Confederate flag with Billy Bass on it, but I saw the Heritage Not Hate, flag.
Yeah.
And they were driving along and they were blowing their horns. I got a photograph of one of them. This was all throughout Virginia. Every time you got near a town, it was Sunday, July the 5th when we were traveling, and you know, there it was. So the question is, like you said, it's not illegal. I don't want it to be illegal. I don't know of anybody who is on our side of this discussion who wants to criminalize the display of the Confederate treason flag. Right next door to me, even as we speak, is a house that has that flag hanging by its mailbox on a flagpole for all to see. And you know what? I want those people to fly that flag. I mean, I don't want them to fly that flag. I wish they had the brains to understand what it means when they do it. But to the extent that they are morons,
it's a nice biomarker.
Right, exactly. It's like a sign. Stupid spoken here, right? So it's going to continue to be displayed. It does not need to be displayed by any government. It does not need to be displayed by any municipality. And so that the only people displaying it can mark themselves out for the rest of us to know that they are jackasses. But what of other?
Nobody on our side of the coin, and that is not, oh, with the flag on, racism will be gone for good, and that's the finger pointing on the other side. See, racism isn't gone. Well, nobody thought it would be gone, but you have to put the shovel in the dirt somewhere, and eliminating an active symbol of hate is a priority, and so it begins. It begins. It's a leverage point. Yes, there are everybody that loves racism and loves the heritage of hate. Yes, they're flying their flag right now. That will probably die down over time, whether the racism does or not. This is a moment in time to leverage the momentum in your communities to attack institutionalized racism. It's a point that we'll all look back on, and there's a lot of momentum. Will racism be eradicated tomorrow? No. but there's an awful lot of good information out there right now that eliminates the prejudice, that eliminates the arguments of the poor arguments of history. You look at what the shooter, what he exposed himself to information-wise or what he bought into, there's a lot of information out there right now that very reasonably refutes that. So this is a really good opportunity of history, an opportune moment of history, I think, in individual communities, make additional movements. And, you know, what's next in South Carolina? Yeah, that's a good question. You know, the progressive organizations are asking that question. All right, we got rid of the flag. Do we need to tackle any more?
Well, I mean,
can we begin to tackle things like the lack of expanded Medicaid,
that's kind of where I was going, Eric, because that's real world. I mean, that has a real impact on lives, black, white, and all colors in between. On the other hand, that nasty flag is gone, but there's still a statue there to Ben Pitchfork Tillman, who openly admitted that he and his engaged in every tactic possible to suppress black identity, black activism, black political self-actualization, up to and including murder. I mean, that statue is a confession of murder.
Should we let him speak? Here are his precise words from the February 23, 1900 issue of the Congressional Daily. So I'm not making this up, folks. These are the words of Benjamin Pitchfork Tillman, U.S. Senator of South Carolina, on the floor of the U.S. Senate. We stuffed ballot boxes. We shot them. We are not ashamed of it. And we eliminated, as I said, all of the colored people whom we could. Yet the statue, the plaque on the statue on the State House grounds in South Carolina calls him a friend of the people.
Yeah,
I assure you, he
kind of narrows the definition of people there, doesn't it?
Or friend. Yeah, I mean, should we continue to attack the monument? I think so. I think we should also continue to make sure that people understand what these people stood for. But beyond that, you know, there are realized people out there impacted by racism, by police brutality, by a refusal of conservative political bodies to provide health care and other important resources. The institutionalism of racism is not going away because the flag was taken down. But it's a point in time that we can all leverage going forward. There was a victory.
Absolutely. And, I mean, this issue is far from over, Eric. I mean, for instance, Jim, who listens from not far from here but was born and raised in South Carolina and is a proud graduate of Citadel, says there are streets in Fort Jackson, South Carolina, named for Confederate generals respecting their military prowess. What will be done with them? Now, for my purpose, I think if you change, say, Lee Road to Medgar Evers Road, that'd be fine by me, because I bear no truck with treason. I think that great big monument to Stonewall Jackson at the Manassas Battlefield Park should have carved into its plinth "traitor," okay? Because there's no getting around it. If they weren't traitors, then why did they sign statements of renewed allegiance to the United States of America when they were offered clemency?
Yeah, I mean, if you're a true student of history, these are obvious things. And then the question becomes, what's an active symbol and what's a symbol of hate? What's an honest, reverential symbol of history, and when are we honoring too much? Now, in the case of Ben Tillman, I think you'd have to be, I don't know what you'd have to be to I guess you'd have to be one of the descendants of Tillman to come and shout racist epithets every year on Martin Luther King Day. Otherwise, I don't know how you could possibly say
well,
that.
I mean, the history is conflicted, Eric. I mean, for instance, James Longstreet, who was Robert E. Lee's right hand, for all intents and purposes. James Longstreet, when the white folks rioted in New Orleans, he faced down the white rioters with the American flag at his back and dressed in the uniform of the United States military or the militia there at the time, and was in command of a number of African American recently freed men troops. I mean, that was an act of open warfare by white people in New Orleans at the time.
Right.
It's documented. There was a massive riot of white people in Memphis, Tennessee in 1866. Longstreet was forever called, and after that was forever called a traitor to his race. But he, you know, there are.
Here's what I think, Bob. Well, what's going to happen? You know, across the country, the dialogue, the fight to get down, to take down the flag, to take it down, fight and victory in South Carolina will lead to all sorts of discussions from sea to shining sea across the Pruitt Point, and some will come down and some will stay. And these are important discussions to have 150 years removed from a war. What's far more important, and I think, and I know you'll agree with me, is that we begin to really tackle the institutional racism that exists in this country, which has been cracked wide open, and Bronx has been cracked wide open and exposed through this. I mean, we already know from Baltimore, from Ferguson, from so many, from Trayvon Martin, et cetera, et al. In the past year or so, we're becoming more and more and more aware of the institutionalism, the outright acts of racism that are occurring. Then there are the indirect or less easy to expose examples, but it's all out there now. And that's what's really important. Communities, municipalities, states, and as a nation, we have to address this. If we don't address this, then the experiment that the founding fathers began so long ago is failed.
No, I think you're right. And we've been trying not to have a meaningful dialogue about this since 1787. Those framers of the Constitution said, okay, we'll declare that they're three-fifths of a human being, and after that we'll kick the can down the road, otherwise the southern states will throw a fit, because they always throw a fit. I mean, remember how very nearly we did not have a Declaration of Independence, specifically because the boys from the home of sedition, South Carolina, alongside Georgia, said, "Well, we simply will not sign if there's anything about the Negroes being as human as we are. We'd rather be with England."
Oh, Lord Almighty!
And so, 1776, can gets kicked down the road. 1787. Can gets kicked down the road. Missouri Compromise, can gets kicked down the road. Kansas-Nebraska Act, can gets kicked down the road. Dred Scott, well, you know, Dred Scott said that the Missouri Compromise was illegal in the first place. Can gets kicked down the road. James Buchanan kicks the can down the road, and it hits a brick wall in 1860.
Yeah, what happened then?
Yeah, well, and then there was that little dust-up. You know, and this opens up, if you've got another minute or two, this opens up another realm of inquiry for us relative to South Carolina. But then, you know, after that, Reconstruction, and it was after that riot in New Orleans, and it was, in fact, the presidential election that culminated in the election of Rutherford B. Hayes, in which the House of Representatives selected him, even though he had fewer popular votes. Well, the reason that came around was because a deal was struck. I think it was Rutherford B. Hayes. A deal was struck. I've got that right, don't I?
Yeah.
A deal was struck. Southern Democrats agreed to cast their vote for him if he would promise to end Reconstruction and let them go back to their happy, their preferred way of life of abusing people of color and enforcing racism and white supremacy. That's how that guy got to be president, based on that deal. And it comes down, you know, and it's Ida B. Wells, whose birthday was today, who watched two of her dearest friends lynched and spoke out against lynching. It's Plessy versus Ferguson. It's separate but equal. It's Jim Crow. It's lunch counters. And there's something, you and I having a literary bent of sorts. I like it. You write it. There's a big deal out about the so-called new novel from Harper Lee. Go Set a Watchman.
At this point, her legacy could not have chosen a worse part to issue a worse time in history to issue a second book.
Well, but I don't necessarily agree, Eric. And I say this without having read it, but having read only reviews and synopses. What this book is the original book that Harper Lee wrote, that her editor then said, no, those parts with the children in it, make that a novel. And the parts with the children in it turned into To Kill a Mockingbird. But she was trying to write at the time some overarching thing that would explain all of her upbringing and all of her life to that point.
It is interesting, though. I mean, the timing of it. Sometimes things just work out the way they're supposed to.
Well, that's why we worship
about Atticus Finch and To Kill a Mockingbird, when, you know, if this had been released 3 years ago, nothing probably would have happened. There would have been some people who liked it, some people who didn't like it, and it would get, you know, shuffled about in the history of the canon. But now, it's come at a critical.
But everybody makes this. Everybody is making noise about this. You know, about what a downer it is to find out that there's a book later on where Atticus gets to be an old, crusty, cranky white, segregationist racist. Well, there's.
Well, what's wrong with us seeing that slide?
Right. Well, what's baffling about that? Anybody who grew up my age, anybody who grew up in the South,
It's perfectly okay to denounce it. It makes it neither poor nor hoax literature. It could be a wonderful characterization of the age, of the reality, of life in Americana.
Right. And exactly, because in the time frame in which that book is set, you know, the 1950s, a lot of otherwise decent, should-have-known-better white people were saying, we just wish they'd stay out of our business down here, and we'll work it out.
I'm going to throw this out there because I just think it's interesting and properly, and my actual background is really in the era of rare books. You know, Harper Lee not only wrote no other novels, she wrote only two other essays in her entire career. One was a Christmas essay from The Calls. She didn't write anything else. It was very, very unusual for somebody not only not to write another book, but not to contribute to the great periodical.
Right. I mean, it's not unheard of for authors to be reclusive. J.D. Salinger comes to mind,
but he kept
writing
stories in New Yorker and Collier's and Saturday Evening Post. Harper Lee was, in fact, the great recluse.
Well, you know that there are people out there, and I think this is somewhat of a sexist position, but there are people out there who think that Truman Capote ghost wrote it.
That's an interesting thought. But I'll just say, I just think it's interesting that she had nothing else to say on any subject regarding race her entire career period, or even in Southern culture. She really, really didn't want anything else to, she had nothing else to say until 2015.
Well, but the whole time the manuscript was laying there.
Right, but now, you know what? We need this as part of the conversation. It helps us remember, in a way that nothing else could, what life was like not too long ago.
And in point of fact, just to sort of backtrack, there in South Carolina, there's something else going on, insofar as it was noted in your newspaper, the state, isn't that what it is?
Yes, the state.
You had a pretty big margin of victory in the Senate on the flag bill.
Right. It was only three senators, including Lee. I hate all gay Bright. Voted against it. So yes, the Senate was almost overwhelmingly in favor.
That was not the case. That was not the case in the South Carolina House, however.
Yeah, and you know what? And this will finish up that sort of timeline. That's a very good. So on Monday they came back in July 6th Monday, the special session started. The Senate, Vincent Shaheen, who had ran twice against Nikki Haley, introduced a bill that would not only take down the flag, but the flagpole, and in fact restore that little space of the ground completely to the way it had been pre-2000. The Senate passed it overwhelmingly with only three opposed. We all got to hear Senator Bright go on his anti-gay spiel and expose himself for what he truly is. But then was the House, and that was the tricky part. On Tuesday, for those who aren't aware, the statute had to be voted out by two-thirds majority in both houses, and it required three readings of the bill each time. On Tuesday, the first House reading occurred. Representative Pitts, who was so opposed to the taking down of the flag that when the governor tried to appeal to him, he said, "I took out my hearing aid so that I couldn't even hear what she was saying."
Nice.
There you go. There's democracy at its best. But the first reading did pass by more than two-thirds, and then Wednesday was the day of reckoning, the second reading. It began early in the morning by about 10 o'clock. By 8 o'clock in the evening, it was still going on. More than 40 amendments were put forward to stall it. People started to think that it was not going to pass. I showed up at 8 o'clock in the evening into the gallery and sat there till essentially 2:30 in the morning. It wasn't until my first hour there that I turned to the right and realized just Jackson was sitting a couple seats down from me. And to his credit, he sat there unmoved for 6.5 hours. Of course, for those who don't know, he's from Greenville, which is where the majority of the pro-flag legislators are from. Very, very ultra-conservative part of South Carolina. When he was 21, that flag went up on the dome. I went back and looked at the history and dates and figured some of that out. And he was at the time a college student in North Carolina, but can you imagine how personal this was to him? He's now an elderly statesman in the civil rights movement, and a native South Carolinian. But the whole debate got bogged down late into the night on one amendment put forward by Representative Merrill. And what everybody recognized that amendment would do it was a simple amendment to make sure that the Confederate Memorial Museum that would house the flag would have the proper budget and ability to take it off. But everybody, I think, recognized what that amendment really was about stalling taking it down, and it could have potentially stalled.
Oh, some of the shrill shrieks of the neo-Confederates in the South Carolina House are really for the ages.
They could have spent years, quote unquote, making sure that the Memorial Museum, the museum was ready to take it on. Everybody really got bogged down.
Representing Michael Pitts of Repig Lickin said, "You're scrubbing history."
Right, I'm going to be from Lawrence, which at one point Lawrence was the neo-Nazi political headquarters of the United States, if you want to get an idea of what Lawrence is like.
Wow. Then there's
there you go.
Let's see. Then there's representing J. Gary Semrel. They're trying to remove vestiges of what the South was, to remove history, almost a cultural genocide.
You know, that voice is oddly familiar from that night. I'll tell you what, but then everybody, of course...
Oh, I do Dumbass Cracker real good.
When Representative Horn, Jenny Horn from Charleston, got up and gave her passion speech, that, of course, went viral. But what's unfortunate, to my mind, what saved the night, saved the moment, and took the flag down, nobody has seen, because the video hasn't gone out, and I think it's really unfortunate. Gilda Cobb Hunter, who is the representative from Orangeburg and the only African-American female representative at the House, took the whole thing on her shoulders, stood up, and just went after her conservative colleagues and said, you know, I think BMW wants this flag down. I think Michelin asked for this flag to come down. I think Sunoco and Boeing asked for this flag to come down. And on and on with the largest list of businesses in the state. And then looked at them all and said, no, I thought you cared about history or about business. I thought you cared about business.
Well, not when it comes to the oppression of our honorable and decent and proud Southern heritage.
He took. Oh, I tell you what.
Eric, where are you? Hold on. Now, how did that happen? Don't go away, Eric. Eric, if you hear me, hold on. For some reason or another, I've lost your audio. All right, do I have you back, Eric?
Yeah, sorry about that.
I don't know. Somebody muted something.
That's okay. I spoke to the ether. where did we leave off?
Well, you were talking about the I thought you cared about business.
So Gilda Cobb Hunter made that speech. To my mind, that was the turning point. Not long thereafter, they finally took the vote. The second reading passed. Since they were already into, I think it was about 2 a.m. the next day, they were already into the next day. They could do the next reading. They took a one-minute recess, voted, and it was over. And J. Todd Rutherford, the minority leader, came out to make the announcement. And on July 10th, the flag was, the bill stated, the passed bill that the governor signed stated that it had to be removed within 24 hours of signature by the governor and restored to its previous state. And so today, if you were to go to South Carolina and visit the State House grounds in Columbia, where once was a 30-foot flagpole with a 52-inch piece of fabric celebrating racism on a large concrete slab surrounded by an iron rock fence, you will see nothing more than sod.
Really? They brought up the concrete and they took up the fence and everything?
You can go have a picnic or hula hoop on the grass. Jump up and down, shout hallelujah, do whatever you want. Oh, look at that, nothing there anymore.
You won't have to move the. Is there room there? Isn't it filled with Confederate sympathizers sitting in sackcloth and ashes and bemoaning the loss of heritage and a bass?
I actually passed it today and saw no sackcloth, no ashes, a couple of flags flying about town, but it's now just earth. There's a great story that was posted on Facebook today about a
and were laying down the sod. African-American woman drove by, stopped her car right on the street on Gervais Street, walked over and said, "Would you mind if I lay a piece of sod down?" And the maintenance people said, "Sure." She picked up a roll of sod and rolled it over, smiled, walked back to her car.
Beautiful.
I think, to my mind, that is the most beautiful moment in all of this, was that your average citizen driving by, an African-American woman, for whom obviously that flag was a source of
anguish?
Anguish, that's a good word. All these years, got to lay one of the rolls of fresh grass atop where one activates flu. And there you go. That's the timeline of how we got from there to here. And with the KKK rolling into town, I decided that I'd get out of town and not give them one sentence other than that. That's my time.
Well, you are in line with you're in line with the editorial writers there at the paper in South Carolina. Let me see if I can find that, because they came up with a great line. They said, "We don't need help from members of any outside groups," because the Klan group coming is from North Carolina, Stan, and certainly not these sorts of groups. "As we've demonstrated with remarkable clarity in the past month, South Carolinians have become perfectly capable of coming together across racial and party and other artificial lines to work for the good of our state." Notice how they said a racial line was an artificial line? Clear.
Yeah.
Do we have much more work left to do? Absolutely, they say. "But people who will be rallying at the State House on Saturday are not going to help us with that or anything else." And so they say, "There's nothing we can do to stop hate groups from staging rallies at our State House. The Constitution gives even the most odious people and groups the right to hold peaceful protests in such public places. But we can do something even better. We can stop them from accomplishing anything they hope to accomplish by simply ignoring them. That's always the best response to extremists, but there's even more reason to stay away from the dueling rallies on Saturday, since there have been local media reports that at least the white racists plan to show up armed. If they're going to shoot anyone, let it be themselves, not us."
Accidentally, of course.
Absolutely. Well, yeah, you know, they're freedom protectors.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Here we are today. I've lived in South Carolina for 13 years. I now live in a state where active racism no longer flies as a symbol. It's a new day of hope. There's a hell of a lot of work to do out there, and we all got to get started on it.
Yeah, you mentioned one of them, expanding Medicaid eligibility for the working poor of South Carolina.
That's at the top of my list as a resident of this state going forward. So, you know, I'm grateful that the governor supported taking down the flag, but how many thousands more have to die a year?
Are you?
She won't sign a piece of paper. So.
Will you be surprised? Are you surprised to find out that she's vice presidential timber now?
oh, what a shock, Bob! I never thought of it. You're kidding me. Somebody might do something for such a motivation. I just can't believe it.
Yeah, I know. And the Beatles just broke up, right? Yeah, breaking news.
But there's a lot of work to do. I know you have, you're involved in really important work in your state. I'm involved in it in my state. We're all involved in national issues together. It's a flag. It's gone. It'll never come back. It's active symbolism is gone forever. But institutional racism exists, and we all have a hell of a lot of work ahead of us. So it's time to roll up our sleeves and get to work.
Amen. Amen. In the purest and
most sincere form. In the meantime, I think I'm going to go put my feet in the sand and let the action tickle it. For
well, how's that song go? Toes in the water and ass in the sand. Not a worry in the world.
Yeah, no, I go to the beach at night, so nobody actually has to see my Moby Dick white body.
Well, you know, I thought you were going to leave it at Moby Dick, and I was going to be a little bit worried. So.
No, it was just merely a
there she blows! From hell's heart, I stab at thee.
Well, you never know what you'll find in the bar later tonight.
just you know,
I'm gonna go hire some grad student amanuensis to make a transcript of this because I think it's an important one. I think it's important for eyewitnesses to history to be written down, to have all your recordings. And certainly since CNN or BBC couldn't get, you know, our call.
We're standing here in Charleston, South Carolina, the capital of South Carolina. Yo!
So this has been a very important conversation. I hope some of your listeners have benefited. And, of course, we're altogether grateful for all support from elsewhere in the nation and world as we worked really hard these past few weeks to bring about a little slice of justice.
Indeed, indeed. Eric Bjorn, thank you so much. You, of course, may be found regularly over at forwardprogressives.com. You can also be found on Amazon, correct?
Right. I have 4 books out now. My latest is called The R-Rated Theologian. I have a short story collection out called Bird. A short story collection out called Birds of a Feather. And again, first name Eric, A-R-I-K, Bjorn, B-J-O-R-N. Thank you, Bob. I really appreciate it.
Have a great evening, and find something in a coconut shell with a paper umbrella in the top, and I'll be thinking of you. I'm so damn jealous. Who am I kidding? I'm so damn jealous I could scream. I need.
And when next I join you, I promise to be coming on the Zeppelin.
Right. Yeah. Well, you flew the Zeppelin over, didn't you? I mean, you've got it tethered.
That's right, man. Yeah, I landed that over in Folly Beach.
Exactly.
As Proverbs is wont to say. Thanks, Bob. Have a good one.
Hey, take care, Eric. Bye now.
All right, bye-bye.
Our good friend Eric Bjorn, eyewitness to history. I thought on this Thorn in the Side Thursday it would be more than appropriate to go over a timeline of what happened there in the capital of South Carolina, which is actually, you know, Columbia. And there's plenty of room for your conversation on other topics. Both phone lines are open, 304-574-8178 or 304-663-HORN, 304-663-4676. That's the stress line. And big thanks going out as we move toward knocking out the hole we were in. Thanks go out to Kelly. And thanks go out to Ed. Ed, who was the original inventor of Have a Show on Me, kicked in this evening and said, wish I could help more. That was a lot of help. Thank you, Ed. Ed also noting, I wish guns were never made. Maybe if we were taught to really communicate with each other, we wouldn't have to suffer violence, police, helicopters, and gun shooting. You know, just a thought. I know, I have those thoughts, too. Thank you very kindly to Jack in Shreveport for his help. And so we find ourselves now also with a renewal. You know, we had a $50 challenge on the table a couple of nights ago, and it got sort of, you know, ignored. But that $50 challenge has been renewed this evening. The next $50 that come in will be doubled. If those next $50 come in, thank you very kindly, and that will put us in rather a good way. That'll mean that we are. Let me see. Do the quick math. That'll put us only $100 away from getting out of the hole we're in at the moment, which is a pretty big deal. So, $50 challenge on the table. The next, whether it's 5 at 10 or 10 at 5, whatever. Your 5 becomes 10, your 10 becomes 20. There's a matching offer on the table if it is indeed met. So a little break and then more conversation as you wish. This is, in fact, listener-supported conversation radio. This is the Horn. And, hey, Eric Bjorn, this goes out to you. I'm Bob Kincaid.
The world away for a minute. pretend I don't live in it. Sunshine gonna wash my blues away. Had sweet love, but I lost it. She got too close, so far, and now I'm lost in the world trying to find me a better way. Wishing I was deep, deep in the water somewhere. Got the blue sky breeze and it don't seem fair. Only worry in the world is the tide gonna reach my chair. Sunrise, there's a fire in the sky. Never been so happy, never felt so high. And I think I might have found me my own kind of paradise. Said be back in a minute. Bought a boat and I sailed off in it. Don't think anybody's gonna miss me anyway. Mind on a permanent vacation. The ocean is my only medication. Wishing my condition ain't ever gonna go away. Cause now I'm knee deep in the water somewhere. Got the blue sky breeze blowing wind through my hair. Only worry in the world is the tide gonna reach my chair. Sunrise, there's a fire in the sky. Never been so happy, never felt so high. And I think I might have found me my own kind of paradise. This champagne shore washing over me. It's sweet, sweet life, living by the salt of sea. One day you could be as lost as me. Change your geography. Maybe you might be. In the water somewhere, got the blue sky breeze blowing wind through my hair. Only worry in the world is the tide gonna reach my chair. Sunrise, there's a fire in the sky. Never been so happy, never felt so high. And I think I might have found me my own kind of paradise. Come on in, the water's nice. Find yourself a lip slice. Grab a backpack of lies. You never know until you try. When you lose yourself, you find the key to paradise.
It's Thursday, July 16, 2015.
I know I'm not a scientist, but here's the problem I've got with some people in my party.
Senator Lindsey Graham chides his fellow Republican candidates on global warming. Regional cap-and-trade programs bringing in the big bucks. Dirty coal is on the way out in the U.S. Plus,
we can be part of something that actually makes a difference to our future.
The climate action movement gets a big assist from a big boy band.
All of those big boys and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
They're trying to regulate the amount of mercury emitted by power plants in the U.S.
Oh, great. More regulation. What next? How much feces they can put in our food? Big government. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, I see you've got a story today about Lindsey Graham, the only one pretty much in the entire panoply of GOP candidates who actually isn't a full-on denier. Are you going to be making fun of him?
Actually, no, because I really appreciate the fact that he is not a total full-on denier.
I'm disappointed. I would have made fun of him, but all right, what do you got?
Go ahead. A Republican presidential candidate, Senator Lindsey Graham of South Carolina, hit back against members of his own party who don't accept the science behind climate change this week in an interview with late-night host Seth Meyers.
I know I'm not a scientist, but here's the problem I've got with some people in my party. When you ask the scientists what's going on, why don't you believe them?
Right.
If I went to 10 doctors and 9 said, hey, you're going to die, and 1 says you're fine, why would I believe the 1 guy?
Right.
Okay, good point. But will it be enough to make anybody notice that Lindsey Graham is running for president in the Republican Party?
At this point, probably not.
Too bad, because on this point, he's absolutely right, which is one of the reasons why he will never win the nomination for the Republican Party.
Bad news for King Coal. For the first time in U.S. history, coal is no longer the dominant fuel source for the nation's electricity. According to an independent industry analysis, as of April of this year, cheaper, cleaner-burning natural gas has displaced coal as the top source of electricity. It now generates more than 30% of U.S. electricity, in part due to the fracking boom in the United States.
So sad to hear about coal.
Yeah, but then it does mean that fracking continues.
Yeah, well, pick your poison. But it's the beginning of the end for coal. So one battle at a time, Desi Doyen.
Well, it is definitely the beginning of the end for coal in Iowa. An electric utility company has agreed to phase out coal at 5 of its generating units in Iowa as part of a settlement with the Environmental Protection Agency and the Department of Justice to resolve violations of the Clean Air Act as part of a lawsuit brought by the Sierra Club. Alliant Energy will pay a $1.1 million fine, install pollution controls, and switch to cleaner-burning natural gas or face shutdown. It's the 200th coal plant to shut down in the U.S. as part of the Sierra Club's Beyond Coal campaign.
So sad.
States that have implemented regional carbon cap and trade programs are polluting less and their economies are doing great.
That can't be. Chris Christie told us that cap and trade programs do not work, and that's why he pulled out of the regional cap and trade agreement up in the Northeast just weeks after he met with David Koch in a secret meeting in New York. But that's just a coincidence.
Well, for more details, that Northeast Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative, also called REGI, is an agreement by 9 northeastern states to cut the carbon dioxide emitted by their power plants. That program generated nearly $250 million for the Massachusetts economy and more than $1 billion for the other northeastern partner states, all money that Chris Christie and New Jersey will not be getting. And it cut the region's greenhouse gas emissions that cause global warming. Bloomberg News reports that the global race for renewable energy has passed a turning point. According to Bloomberg's global analysis, the world is now adding more electricity capacity with renewable energy each year than coal, natural gas, and oil combined. The shift occurred in 2013, according to Bloomberg, and it will continue to accelerate. Bloomberg projects that by 2030, 4 times as much new renewable electricity generation capacity will be built than fossil fuel power plants.
A lot of good news in this report, Desi Doyen. You feeling all right?
Yeah, I think actually some good things are happening, so it's important to talk about it.
All right.
Finally, the Movement for Climate Action just got a big assist in reaching today's teenage girls. The insanely popular British boy band One Direction has launched a campaign to get their fans engaged in acting on climate change.
Please, will you join us to put pressure on our leaders?
Become part of Action 1D. Make your voice heard and make 2015 the year we changed our futures forever.
Their new website to mark the launch of their campaign is called Action 1D for One Direction.
Does it matter that I don't really even know who One Direction is?
No, you're not their target audience.
It just makes me old, doesn't it?
Yeah.
For much more on all of the stories we covered today and the ones we couldn't get to, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find us and follow us on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. From bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Old man. That's what makes you beautiful.
Yeah, I think I recognize the name, but I wouldn't know a song and whether it had a good beat and you could dance to it. Forget it. Sorry. This is the horn. We're a little over halfway past a little more than past the halfway mark of the program. There, that's what I meant. And big thanks going out to Ralphs. Thank you very kindly, Ralphs. Half of our $50 challenge has now been met. $25 more to go. Yay! Thank you. And then after that, we will be within striking distance of filling in the hole that we found ourselves at the beginning of the program this evening. With all the talk about flags, I thought you might appreciate a little bit more flag information, then we'll go right to the phones. This via our chat room moderator, Lottie. You know, of course, that President Obama went to Oklahoma today to become the first sitting president ever to visit a federal prison. Mm-hmm. I wonder how that's playing with the right wingers. He's no Christian. He's a Kenyan Muslim. You know, there is that suggestion there by Yeshua, the brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer and itinerant semi-literate rabbi, that, you know, his followers should visit people in prison because they're miserable and alone. Well, guess what? When he arrived, a whole bunch of Oklahomans were there waving the treason rag at him. Yeah, nice. Oh, treason runs deep in this here country. Oklahomans waving the Confederate battle flag at the President of the United States of America. Charming, isn't it? But, you know, it's just another day in Oklahoma, because let's say you're into fitness and firing your freedom protector. They've got a run and gun biathlon. Mm-hmm. It's a competition of some sort. I guess you run, and then you shoot at things, and then you run some more, and then you shoot at some more stuff. And last year, participants complained that the targets were too hard to see. Mm-hmm. So this year's run and gun biathlon will have highly visible targets. Anybody want to guess? The chat room already knows. Yeah, the new highly visible targets for the run and gun biathlon out in Oklahoma stand are going to be pride flags. You know, the rainbow flag? Yeah. Isn't that charming? Of course, once they got called out on it, they said, "Oh, it was only a joke, and you took us out of context anyway." Troy Stevenson is executive director of Freedom Oklahoma and said people got really offended and really upset, and people really were feeling threatened. People took it as a threat, and people felt very threatened. But the organizers of the event said, "Well, listen, last year they complained that the targets were hard to see, and we thought it'd be funny to lure participants with promises of pride flags as a new high visibility target on the 500-yard range." You could definitely tell by reading the comments that they were trying to make a joke out of this. Because, you know, it's so funny. It's so funny when you make a ha-ha funny out of massacring people who are a little bit different from how you have sex. Ay, ay, ay. Let's run over and... Let's run over and see what's happening with Jim. Hey, Jim.
Hello, how are you doing?
I'm okay. We had, you know, the monsoon let up for a day or so here, didn't it?
It did indeed. As a matter of fact, the wind was so fast a couple nights ago that it was triggering the security lights.
Oh, it was clipping right along.
Mm-hmm.
I later saw photographs of the funnel cloud that formed over the New River Gorge, and my, that was interesting.
No, thank you.
Yeah, I know. That's why I was eight minutes late to the air that Tuesday evening, because I was standing here on the back stoop and I was watching. I didn't know if it was going to turn into one or if it had been one, but it was obviously a funnel cloud wanting to be something that was passing a few miles to my southeast.
Yeah, well, I was wondering if I should put on my red shoes.
Yeah, hopefully. Well, there are a few people in Beckley that probably could stand having a house dropped on them, but we'll leave that alone.
I guess so. I just wanted to bring up an interesting point about South Carolina history.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if you remember when I sent you pictures of the Church of the Holy Cross in Statesburg.
Yes.
Remember those?
Yes.
That beautiful English Gothic church.
Right.
My family is from Statesburg. That's where we sort of landed about 200 and some odd years ago. And Statesburg missed being the capital of South Carolina by 2 votes.
Two?
Two.
I wonder who the bastards were that spoiled the party.
I'm glad they did, because it's a beautiful place and it's an extremely sleepy, bend in the road, so to speak, as you come down from one area up Columbia, 276 or whatever, I can't remember the road or whatever. But anyway, I spent a lot of happy times in Statesburg, the church there. And
yeah, what's that? It's made of some interesting stone.
It's called Pinatea, rammed earth.
Yeah, rammed earth. That's right. That's right. Not
right.
Stone at all.
And also, right next to the old family plot, is buried Joel Poinsett, for whom the Poinsettia is named. He was a minister to Mexico under one of the presidents. I can't remember which one, Van Buren or somebody else. Somebody has to correct me about that. But yeah, his plot's right out there. And it's just a wonderful, sleepy town. A lot of interesting people live there. And as a matter of fact, in what was the old Anderson home, it was made up of General Greene's headquarters during the Revolutionary War.
I'll be darned.
He operated there. Mm-hmm. And up there, up the road, there's Thomas Sumter, the Gamecock. And if you go to that cemetery, you will find a little chapel. His wife was French, and the little chapel, of course, Catholics weren't exactly the prominent denomination then, but you will see her name there, and there's just an empty brick type of mausoleum. Of course, it's been stripped of all the stuff, but still it's there. There's a lot of history in Statesburg, and I'm so glad it did not become the capital. I really am, because I could not have imagined having spent the happy times I spent there as, you know, being Columbia, the center of all these things that you guys have been talking about. And, you know, as far as the Confederate flag is concerned, you know, Bob, it means certain things to certain people, and I'm going to let it go with that. And whether or not it's gone the way of the dodo or whatever, you know, an action passed is an action completed. And I'm very glad to see that South Carolina has begun to absorb, you know, the impact of all that. And I'm so sorry that it took the lives of 9 innocent people to precipitate the removal.
That's the greatest horror of it all, Jim, because the sad thing to realize, and I don't think there's any debate in this, is had that murderer not done what he did, that flag would still be flying.
Possibly. But like I say, it means different things to different people, and I'm not going to comment on that. There's no point. I think your first caller has rather ably done so. I don't always agree with what he says, but nonetheless, there it is, and there you have it. And
well, I just found out that your church there in Statesburg has its own Wikipedia page, and it notes that it still has its original urban pipe organ from 1851,
mm-hmm.
and that $2.3 million were spent to restore extensive termite damage.
It was falling apart. Yeah, my mom had a real good friend who was on the committee to do that, to raise the money. That's a very rich community. It's called the Charlotte Thompson Community Center, or not center, but the Charlotte Thompson Community. But I spent many happy hours with the Reverend at that time when I was writing a paper on Stephen Decatur Miller. And, of course, he was a parishioner there. He gave $100 for the restoration of the bell tower that was taken down during the storm before the Civil War. And Stephen Decatur Miller left and went his way. And, of course, he was one who said that slavery is not a necessary evil, but it's positive good. So those are the words that I found in studying him. And, you know, going through those old parish records and stuff like that, and this was before, you know, a lot of this stuff was being taken to the Capitol to be restored. And it was just incredible going through the records of that church and who was there and the names of the people and who, you know, contributed to it. And right up the road from there is a Greek Revival little office. It was Dr. Anderson's house, or his office. And he was a Confederate surgeon during the war. And his brother was a major general who was in the Confederate Army, too. So I have deep roots in the Confederacy, I guess, and I'm not ashamed to admit it.
Well, I have ancestors of my own who committed treason. And
well, there you go. But these were good people.
And I have to deal with it.
And, you know, but, you know, the flag is gone, and where it's put, that's where it's going to be put. And it's
probably where it belongs, in a museum.
Well, yeah. I thought that had occurred, and nonetheless, it did not. And, of course, it had to take that thing in Charleston.
It's the usage but, it's the usage to which it was later put, Jim. You know, in April 1865, that flag was rolled up and put away. They didn't. The veterans of the Confederate Army who survived and marched home didn't march home under that banner.
No, they didn't. As a matter of fact, you know, I just wonder exactly how much different it had been if Abraham Lincoln would have lived, because his plan for Reconstruction of the South was not that of the radical Republicans that took charge after his death. And of course, you know what they tried to do to Andrew Johnson. I mean, Andrew Johnson, I don't know a whole lot about the man.
Well, the impeachment crisis came about, by the time they got around to the actual impeachment, it was on different grounds, but it had as much to do with his resistance to Reconstruction as anything else.
I just wish that John Wilkes Booth had gotten to his room in that hotel, in the National Hotel, or wherever he was staying, instead of Ford Theater, to tell you the truth. I wish Abraham Lincoln had lived, because his policy toward the defeated Confederacy was one of conciliation and a rapprochement. And things could have been different. They would have been different. But, you know, They always kill, you know, just like they tried to kill, just like they did kill Tsar Alexander II, who had tried to emancipate the serfs. They killed him too with a bomb. They always kill the good ones who try to.
Well, Jesus,
make things
Gandhi,
right.
Dr. King,
President
John Kennedy,
and whomever. Yeah,
yeah.
Right. But, you know, the only flag that I'm flying tonight or I have out is the United States Marine Corps flag.
Yeah, because of what happened today in southeast Tennessee.
And that's just dreadful. It really is. And a lot of my family were Marines. I didn't go into the Marine Corps because, hell, I had 9 months of that shit at the Citadel. Instead of 11 weeks. I mean, that's exactly how bad it was during my plebe year. So,
Now graduating from the Citadel, I mean, how did that work? Did one declare one's preference of branch of service?
Exactly.
I mean, was that senior year or when?
Junior year. That's the beginning of your junior year when you took your contract, and mine was with the United States Air Force. Excuse me. I'd much rather be, well, up in the air or behind the desk than I would be on the island.
Up to your ass in jungle?
No, exactly, exactly. And I saw all that stuff and, you know, and...
Well, that has some resonance. My uncle, when he enlisted in the Navy in the Second World War, said he was doing so precise. He was a relatively short fellow. He was perfectly, he had a perfect stature for the relatively cramped confines of a fighter plane. And he explained to his family that he was joining the Navy because nobody was going to march his 5'4" ass through any jungle. He said, "I'll drown."
Well, I can certainly appreciate that because I can remember as part of the training that I had in ROTC cadet there, had to spend 10 days in Hellhole Swamp on jungle survival training. And believe you me, that was no picnic. And I can just imagine what these poor guys went through when they had to spend a year over in Southeast Asia. And I'm not even trying to compare the two, but I can just imagine and appreciate. And
well, I tell you what, you want to talk about some a ceremonial gaggle. I was walking out of the Hart Senate office building last week. Agnes and I were when all of a sudden, there were just this coterie of uniforms and brass. And we were standing outside the building there when, lo and behold, it was the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. He had been testifying in the Hart building at the same time that we were doing our work.
Uh-huh.
And, I mean, it was no disrespect, it was like a peacock. There were people there to take off his jacket. There was another person specifically detailed to hold his jacket. Another person was detailed to fold his jacket. There was another person detailed to open his door. And he's fairly recent to the job in the last year or so.
Right.
He was previously the commandant of the Corps. And he had those four stars across those shoulder boards, and oh my God, I mean, it was like God Almighty was walking the sidewalk.
Well, I'm certain that man earned them. And absolutely. And you know, of course he's at the very top of the food chain of the corporation. Right next to the president in his cabinet.
And of all things, when I saw him, I got curious as to what was going on, and I checked, and lo and behold, he got upbraided. The chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff got upbraided by that little jumped up bit of nothing, Tom Cotton from Arkansas, who wanted to know
what did he do.
Well, first of all, he insulted the chairman of the Joint Chiefs because of the nickname that the man has earned. His name is, they call him Fightin' Joe, and he said, "Well, Senator, I certainly didn't give myself that nickname, and I don't go by it." And then Cotton upbraided him, saying, basically accusing the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of not doing enough the infantry. Because remember, this Tom Cotton punk, thinks he's the second coming of von Clausewitz.
I see.
Because he served as an officer in Iraq. And, you know, I think there's probably nothing worse than a second lieutenant who winds up a senator.
Well, you do have what they call 90-day wonders or whatever he was. I don't know. But I don't know much about Cotton. I've seen him on TV. Unfortunately, I did not see Lindsey Graham on Seth Meyers. That's one line I missed. And, you know, as much fun as you and I have had about Lindsey Graham and stuff like that, it's all camp, and you know what we're talking about.
Yeah.
And shtick. But, you know, I have a degree of respect for Lindsey Graham. I mean, he came from very humble origins. I think both parents had died, and he even sent his sister through school and was very devoted to her, and, you know, there are good things in Lindsey Graham. A lot of things I don't agree with that he says, but I think he's a decent human being. I really do. And he, like I say, he will say things that cause me...
You know, he may be an absolute joy to be at a garden party with or whatever, It is his lust to, I don't use that word casually. It is his lust to send other mothers' children off to fight meaningless wars. He gets positively excited about the prospect. Now, you know, he spent the Iraq War prosecuting as a JAG, either prosecutor or defending, right. You know, guys who pissed dirty.
He just retired from the Air Force Reserve as an O5 or a lieutenant colonel.
Yeah, he was doing lawyery stuff. You know, never heard a shot fired in anger. And
well, maybe if he gets himself in a race where he realizes that, you know, what he's saying and what he's doing and his positions are, he might change that particular thing. But I was rather happy to hear a reference to the fact that he had at least acknowledged global warming to a degree.
And it is exactly that, Jim. It's a matter of degree. I mean, he's not.
I've seen degree than no degree.
Well, I suppose so. But I mean, I've heard his previous positions on, say, you know, the burning of coal, and I know what his position is relative to the ongoing. The ongoing assault on innocent people here in our state, and he's all for it. He'd like to blow up some more mountains.
Hmm.
And I won't lie to you, that colors my opinion.
Well, and I don't blame you.
But
you know, there's always a possibility people change and people's viewpoints change. They're not static, and. Perhaps.
Oh no! I learned some of that this past week, and I mean I won't betray any confidences or name any names, but we were in a Republican office, and I simply said, "Listen, what can we do? You know, we want your help, but it's a two way street. What can we do to help you?" And in a moment of extreme candor, the response came, "Get me and again, this was coming from a Republican office. Get me a new majority leader."
Well, I don't think that would hurt anything at all, to tell you the truth. I think Mr. Boehner has been there too long for any good that he's been doing. And I'll say that he's like, what was said, the long parliament or whatever, go in the name of God, go.
Yeah, exactly. You have done enough.
He's done with you. You've done enough. You've done enough hurting, you know, you've done enough good for bad for whatever you've accomplished.
Yeah, those were the words of Oliver Cromwell, weren't they?
I do believe they were referring to one of the parliaments of England at the time. But well, the only reason I really call this is just to mention the fact about Stateburg and
I have a historical nexus for you that I think you will appreciate. You mentioned Joel Roberts Poinsett.
Right.
Of course, he was French-born, so I guess he was more like Poinsett.
Right.
But, so you're absolutely right. He was the first person to bring back that plant whose leaves turn red, but which are not flowers. The flowers are the little tiny white things.
Right.
But after having been Madison's minister plenipotentiary to the newly independent state of Mexico.
That's it, Madison, yes.
He brought the plant back and kept them in his kept them in his hothouse at his plantation at Greenville.
Right.
But he was very much into science, the botanical sciences of the day, and he became friends with the progeny of John Bartram. And John Bartram was America's first naturalist, America's first botanist. He, in fact, operated under a patent from the king prior to the Revolution. John Bartram was literally a drinking buddy of Benjamin Franklin.
There's some family connection with you there, isn't there?
That is Agnes's multi-great-grandfather.
Okay.
And so because Joel Poinsett brought that plant back to Greenville, South Carolina, and grew it, and because he was interested in botany, that meant that he was friends with the folks up at Bartram's Gardens near Philadelphia. And so by virtue of an arrangement with Joel Ponce, Bartram's Gardens became the first commercial purveyors of the poinsettia in the United States.
Well said. Well said.
I love those little moments.
Those little vignettes of history that, you know, a lot of us don't know, and a lot of us need to know. And in that churchyard around Holy Cross, there are a lot of good people who are laid to rest there. And it will always mean so much to me. And on any of this conversation, my heart goes out to the families of those four Marines and also the officers who were hurt.
Yeah, because there were four killed and others injured.
It broke my heart to hear that. It really did. And that's all I have to say. And
well, I understand, Jim, and my heart breaks with every one of these. I guess it's either that we can't learn or we don't learn, or are unwilling. And if it's are unwilling to learn, I think that's the most dangerous scenario of all. Because I'm sure in coming days, because this guy had a Middle Eastern name, we will no doubt be treated by the usual suspects to an ongoing litany of ISIS done come to get us.
Well, you never can tell. It could be. I mean, it was the last day of Ramadan. It could have been his own reason. I understand that there's some type of acceleration of virtue if you do something in favor of their cause that will either geometrically or exponentially put you into their version of heaven. I don't know. I'm just speaking extemporaneously here. It's what I've heard, and I'm not gonna put my name to it, but that's just what I've heard. And my God, for a recruiting station to be shot up like that, and those four young men who would do nothing better than serve their country and serve the flag, and my heart's broken. It really is. I haven't had anything affect me as much.
Oh, I can't begin to comprehend the horror, because, and I don't mean to seem callous, and I hope I'm not taken that way if I say this. If you have a loved one who is deployed overseas in a war zone, it is a nightly, daily, ongoing status of uncertainty and fear.
Yes, it is.
But when your Marine son is a recruiter who gets up in the morning and goes down to the strip mall and dies simply because we refuse in this country to do anything about the ease by which we acquire firearms. That's in a way, Jim, that is doubly sickening.
Well, there's a great deal of merit to what you say. A great deal of merit, absolutely.
Because in parallel, a jury in Colorado, also on this day, has found the Aurora, Colorado movie theater shooter
to be guilty.
And you know, you've been listening for a long time. I have said time after time after time that these shooters are not crazy. And yet
obviously not. He knew what he was doing, according to whatever testimony was given to that jury. I think three women and nine men.
And
or was it nine women and nine women and three men, I think. But, I mean, you know, this business of saying, you know, I did this because I just went nuts, no. And he dyed his hair red and did all kinds of crazy stuff. But, you know, he was found out. And in Colorado, I don't think they've, they're not exactly a pro-death penalty state.
No, but you know, you have to remember that this is a country that, in which we have more than one sitting Supreme Court justice who says that just because you don't understand why you're being executed is no reason you shouldn't be. I mean, that's the level of barbarity to which Antonin Uncle Nino Scalia stoops.
Well,
I mean, there's the fairly famous case out of Texas, and a reprieve was granted. I don't know if it has run and the man's been subsequently executed or not, but a reprieve was finally granted because the man tried to subpoena God, John Wayne, and Batman at his trial for murder.
Who, this guy in Colorado?
No. This was a guy in Texas.
Oh, in Texas.
And they still found him sane and convicted him of murder. And we're preparing to we're preparing to kill him in the name of the state when he was granted a reprieve to examine whether or not it's constitutionally okay to execute someone who doesn't understand the psychiatrists were unanimous in their findings that the guy legitimately, really, honest to goodness, thinks that he is about to be executed because he is a Christian.
I can't speak to that. I can't speak to that at all. I'm not going to get into that aspect of it. I'll say this, and I've got to let you go, because you have other people who want to talk. I do know they did find some 90-year-old guy who was at Auschwitz who was the one who was... Well, he simply counted all the booty they got from the deportees there, and they finally gave him his just desserts, I think 4 years, but he's in his 90s, so he'll probably never serve that term. But, I mean, I'll say this. The mills of the gods grind slowly but exceedingly fine.
Amen to
eventually
that.
Eventually they do find out. So, listen, have a good evening, and I'll... give you leave to your other callers.
All right. You have a good evening, Jim. Take care.
Yes, sir.
Bye now. Jim calling from not too awfully far from here. Lines open if you want to participate in the conversation. You can hear how easy it is. 304-574-8178. You know, we welcome first-time callers. We've never had one faint or go into apoplexy or the phantods or anything like that. 304-574-8178 or 304-663-HORN, 304-663-4676. On Skype, of course, Bob Kincaid Horn is the contact. If you've never gone the Skype route before, just shoot me a contact request and we will be conversing before you can say boo. Meanwhile, Cindy out in the Great Northwest regarding Lindsey Graham says, I loathe the guy. The only reason he seems genteel is because he's gay. Nothing wrong there, but isn't that closet he lives in a little old and rancid? If he can't stand up for himself and come out, I tend to think his other dealings are dishonest as well. Aside from that, I disagree with 99.9% of his views. As do I. And that's an interesting observation, Cindy. If he can't stand up for himself and come out, I tend to think his other dealings are dishonest as well. It's not that he's not willing to stand up for himself. It's that he wants to go on being senator. And he cannot go on being senator if he is a gay man. Now, if he came out and he was the senator from Iowa, he might have a chance. If he was the senator from North Dakota, maybe. I'm trying to think of places that are prone to electing Republicans. But there ain't no way he gets to go on being a senator in South Carolina despite the progress of removing that flag. There ain't no way he gets to go on being a senator in South Carolina. I mean, okay, they reelected a black guy to the other Senate seat, but that's different from gay. I mean, the black guy's a black guy. He's not an abomination unto the Lord. You understand? I don't mean you personally, Cindy. I mean, generally. Really? A gay? I mean, we'll know we've turned a corner when there's a gay senator from Alabama or Mississippi. Without a doubt. But that corner is, be it South Carolina or Georgia or Mississippi or Alabama or Tennessee, whatever, that corner is a long way down the block yet. So, I think that's at least a plausible explanation. What else? 25 minutes past the hour? Well, we're not lacking. A little bit of good news. Long time coming. But this is, I don't know, I guess this doesn't quite qualify as a historic day. But TLC has apparently told the Duggars that they're going to have to go out and find honest work. It only took 2 months after the world found out that there's a new word out there, Duggery. In a statement to the Associated Press today, TLC said 19 kids and counting, quote, will no longer appear on the air. Oh, dear. There's a little bit of weasel room in that, isn't there? Makes you almost wonder if they're going to stream it or put it on Netflix or something. And, of course, there's the usual rehash of what we mean when we say Duggery, which I think we covered at entirely too much length probably earlier. And, by the way, there won't a story you will not hear Brian Fisher over to the American Family Association of Tupelo, Mississippi, bemoaning as a matter of persecution or violation of First Amendment rights. Governor Greg Abbott, governor of the state of Texas, got on a plane in New York Tuesday night. As he boarded the plane, a fellow walked up to him, shook his hand, and then said, I hope you, and I'm guessing the word begins with F and is in its participial form, I hope you expletive go to hell because of your stance on gay marriage. I'm going to see you on the plane. So guess what? The airline pulled him off the plane, put him up in a hotel room, and let him go home on Wednesday. Well, at least they didn't, you know, taser him or put him in jail. Sheesh. But, in a way, as to that 32-year-old man in New York, good for you. Good for you. The inquiry into the source of all things bad continues. You'll notice I didn't say scientific inquiry, I said inquiry. You may recall last night we had the clip of the person saying that bad weather was because of abortions and homosexuals. Not to be outdone, enter Jim Baker, he of one of these days, if what they believe in is true, Jesus is going to come down to the pearly gates where Peter meets him and go, where did I say to build a water slide? No, really, where? Well, Jim's got another gig. And he don't try to raise no pissant $200 a night, neither. He did. And he wants America to know that he's figured out where all the trouble's coming from. Oh, yeah.
Your brother's blood's crying to me from the ground. What he was saying
crying
is...
crying!
Yeah.
What from the ground. Blood!
What he's saying is... blood don't need vocal cords.
Mm.
Blood doesn't need a body. And it doesn't need a tongue. It doesn't need lungs. What God said is the blood itself has a life, and I hear the language.
Life is in the blood.
I hear that language of that life. So whenever the doctor's aboard a baby and that blood's being flushed down the commode, God hears the voice of that baby going down that commode saying...
Yeah, because that's what they do. All of a sudden, the latest ration is the poor little abort, and Hood is not out there hustling off fetus toes or anything like that. It's a made-up load of crap. But, of course, if you're over on the right wing, you'll believe anything as long as it fits within your confirmation about crap you're supposed to believe. Obama's a Kenyan Muslim fascist socialist. Communist. He is. I mean, we had the story. I don't know if I even covered this or not. The woman in East Tennessee who was caught trying to pass computer laser printed laser her home printer. She printed $5 bills and hundreds. She copied them and printed them on her home printer, and then very carefully, I'm sure, used scissors and glued them front to back. She didn't even try to do the two. No, it's too complicated. The two sided printing would never go. And she got caught, and they said, "Well, why'd you do this?" And originally she said, no, I got this $5 bill in change up there in Bristol. Big city, Bristol. And then they said, ma'am, can we see inside your purse? Well, I guess. Looked inside her purse and she had a glued together $100 bill where the back of the $100 bill was upside down. Oh! But it was okay to print your own money. Because, you know, he'd say that. But, you know, if you're a little old right-winger and low-information voter and IQ roughly the same as your shoe size, if you want to believe it, there's somebody out there that'll tell you you should. You know, hence this.
Self has a life, and I hear the language.
Life is in the blood.
I hear that language of that life. So whenever the doctor's aboard a baby and that blood's being flushed down the commode, God hears the voice of that baby going down that commode saying, help!
Yeah.
Forgive, Lord, help! Forgive them, you know, forgive my mother. Blood of those babies.
Please, well, tell us now. Well, this is so important stuff, because we got to get down to what do we need to do. You need to know more than not have bad breath. You need to know what the Word says we're to do and not do. We've got to get back to the Word. You can't just have some clever little sayings in your church. What does God say?
I liked it better when he was working with puppets and Tammy Faye.
Well, he said that the shedding of innocent blood has an effect on the land. He said,
oh, my God, we are going to have earthquakes then.
He said that...
I think this is our Thorn in the Side Thursday official non sequitur. Shedding of innocent blood. We're going to have earthquakes then. I think I'd like to have pizza tonight. Oh, volcanoes! No, this is not a rehash of Prayer Meeting Wednesday. It's not. I promise.
Dollar Tree has defiled my land, but then listen to...
Dollar Tree? What about Dollar General? Dollar Tree's defiled the land? How about what about Family Dollar? I mean, Walmart?
This one, I want you to hear this one especially. immorality, fornication, and homosexuality. But it says, Leviticus 18, which discusses sexual sins. It says, do not defile yourself in any of these ways, because this is how the nations that I'm going to drive out before you became defiled.
Only it doesn't say that. I'll bet you a dime to a dollar. It does not say that. Dude's just making it up as he goes along.
Even the land was defiled, and I punished it for its sin, and the land vomited out its inhabitants.
Vomiting land. Vomiting land. And the land was defiled? Were the Midianites making holes in the ground? I'm lost again.
Now what that means is, God said, because of sexual perversion, I will cause the land to vomit out the inhabitants of it.
What does that mean?
Well, whenever a volcano erupts, it drives people away from it.
Oh, my God.
It vomits people.
A volcano is it's earth vomit. Earth vomit. Wonder what Jim Baker's take on fracking is. I mean, now that poisonous stuff, that's some earth vomit. No, that's not a problem. The Homer sectionals is the problem.
It throws people out of their domicile.
Think of the volcano.
We had to have a little giggle here, didn't we? Think of the volcanoes and the well-coiffed lady in the blue dress sitting next to him, who looks surprisingly like an under-made-up Tammy Faye from years gone by, says, almost Homer Simpson-like. Think of the volcanoes. Oh, let's go back to that. I know so many of you are saying, no, don't. Let's not.
Erupts, it drives people away from it.
Oh, my God.
Vomits people.
It
throws people.
And everybody knows that the Middle East is just chock-a-block with volcanoes. Only it's not.
It throws people out of their domicile.
Think of the volcanoes. Think of the volcanoes. It's puking molten lava, blood, fire.
Yes.
It is vomiting it up. I never thought of this. You're preaching stuff.
Jeremiah.
Oh, you're preaching stuff, brother. I never thought of this. Me neither, Jim. Me neither.
People need to hear. People have got to wake up. Sunday school lessons are nice, but you've got to hear, thus saith the Lord, now.
Yes, yes.
Pastor Kilpatrick, I am serious. Go ahead.
By the way, I think he's working out of Branson, Missouri now. So just imagine you booked your trip to Branson, and you're hoping maybe you're going to see, is Porter Wagner still alive? Is he working Branson? Who's working Branson? And then you bought the bargain Branson ticket, and you wind up at the Jim Baker show. Wait! Dang it! Where's Porter? You gotta wake up! Oh, hell, let's clap. Maybe we'll get another sandwich.
And then here's what it said. It said the land is full of sexual sin, like adultery, homosexuality, because of the curse, the land...
Wait. Didn't we go through a little thing a few years back where bankers were throwing people out of their domiciles? Is Wall Street a big volcano? That's a tough job sometimes, you know? It really is.
And lies parched. Because of the curse of sin, the land lies parched. What's going on in California right now?
God damn it, Porter Wagner's dead. No wonder they wound up at Jim Baker's.
With such a drought in California.
In history. Worst drought in history.
Oh, wait. Worst drought in history. Wait, okay. We're actually talking. Okay, good. This ought to be. Okay.
What it said, the land is full of sexual sin, like adultery, homosexuality. Because of the curse, the land lies parched. because of the curse of sin, the land last parts. What's going on in California right now?
And notice that they blame that on the adulterers. Oh, well, adulterers, it's subject to interpretation. I mean, they're literalists and everything, and they believe in a seven-day creation and dinosaurs living at the same time with us human beings, but it's all literal until they need to do some interpreting.
Such a drought in California.
In history. Worst
drought in history.
Not even a year left of water.
Because of the curse, the land lies parched, and the pastures in the desert are withered. The prophets follow an evil course and use their power unjustly. The next one, and this is a very important one, the fourth one, Brother Jim, is breaking covenant, is what causes the land to be affected, breaking covenant. Listen to this one. It says, the earth is defiled by its people. They have disobeyed the laws, violated the statutes, and broken the everlasting covenant. What's getting ready to happen with Israel right now?
I don't know. I mean, they've been having some riots and stuff, and never mind. No, I'm sure. Wait, is there a volcano in Israel? Did I miss that?
Is the president is turning his back on Israel?
Only he didn't. I mean, we're still sending the $4 billion every year, right as rain. Check keeps clearing. But that's it. Oh, I bet there's more.
We've been in a covenant with Israel since 1948.
Yes.
We've been blessed. We haven't cursed Israel. We've been blessed. And we've been blessed because we blessed them.
No. Do you know how those ancients made covenants? Those old Bronze Age guys? And they were guys. In order to show that they were not going to slit each other's throats, one would put his hand on the other guy's shoulder, and the other guy would put his hand on the other guy's shoulder, and then they would each grab each other's penises. And that was the covenant. See? Okay. Nobody's going to hurt. And I have held your junk. I have a covenant with thee. Just can't quite imagine old Harry Truman holding Menachem Begins or any of those. No, can't. Just can't. Following on my comments about Lindsey Graham in the closet in South Carolina. Cindy says, wouldn't his base, who voted him in how many times, consider him to be the same man if he were out? Why won't he help his own kind since he's so close to retirement anyway? It never hurt Barney. Barney's in Massachusetts, Cindy. It's a big difference. And no, they would not consider him to be the same guy. He would then be, you know, as long as he's closeted, because see, if you're closeted in the South and you're like Lindsey, they say things like, well, he's a confirmed bachelor. Or they say, well, he's really sensitive. He's a sensitive man. And they won't say gay. But if you get up all in their face about it, well, the next thing you know, the preachers are in the pulpit saying, and the Lord God said, I will make a volcano rise up like a pimple on the ass of Edom, and it will vomit forth and burn up Lindsey Graham because he is an abomination. See, that's really how it works. I know some of this is like cultural anthropology, but it is. With regard to the Duggars, Marty says, that show appears on Netflix. I'm switching to Amazon Prime. But I think we're about to, okay, we've been covenanting with Israel. And that's why we've been blessed. It has nothing to do with the creation of a perpetual post-war economy of permanent consumption and planned obsolescence. No. It's because Israel.
But
we
now,
have been Israel's second home.
Yes, we have.
We have been a second Israel. We have been somewhat as a God-blessed nation, a spiritual haven for the Jew, Israel, and us.
Just one of them. For the Jew. Who is it? And see, they're not even clueless of the degree of fetishism and disgustingness that they're engaging in.
Us are the only ones. They were sent out by Spain and everything else. I mean, this is every detail is taken.
A verb, Jim. We need a verb.
Place, people.
It is.
Go on.
So what it says is breaking covenant. He said, therefore, the curse consumes the earth. Its people must bear their guilt. Therefore, the earth's inhabitants are burned up and very few are left. But it talks about breaking covenant. So what we're getting ready to do right now, we're on the verge of breaking covenant with Israel and turning our back on Israel and letting the United Nations actually take away Jerusalem and divide Jerusalem.
Missed that one. Yeah, missed that one totally. Maybe it's tucked away in a sub-paragraph of Common Core, or perhaps Agenda 21. Going to take away Jerusalem. Where to? We're not really sure. Maybe they'll put it down on down in Baja California. Nah. Yeah. Oh well.
And we're breaking covenant. But not only are we breaking covenant now, but this law has just come down from the Supreme Court. You got the blood moons coming up and all, like I talked about in the program. All this stuff is dovetailing and coming together right now.
But God in His judgment, we bring it on ourselves then. You're saying the four things that bring it up. Now,
yeah, we bring it on ourselves. Don't you love that? See, that's what I love about these people. We bring it on ourselves. And if that's your relationship with God, then how about a woman who is routinely beaten by her husband? Well, she brings it on herself. And we've had example after example after example of that. Thank God this is almost over.
The last one, we are negotiating this minute while we're sitting here with Iran.
Yes.
We're making, you know, the Bible talks about sitting around tables telling lies, making decisions,
yes.
You know, and we're making covenant with Iran, who have vowed.
Sure.
Vowed to destroy.
Well, if they vowed, then, I mean, you know.
Destroy Israel.
And yet, there remains a Jewish population inside Iran that has been there since the time of the Persian kings of kings, the Achaemenids. I mean, they liked it so well when everybody else went back to Israel, because the king said, "Okay, some stayed. No, we like it here. We got a nice gig." But they vowed, you know. Hey, even though that was a sloppy translation from a right-wing website, they vowed. But see, because we are trying to prevent Iran from achieving a nuclear device, which actually would probably drive poor Israel stark raving crazy and might make them use those 200-plus nuclear devices that they already have that nobody's allowed to talk about. Shh. Which makes you wonder. Does Israel really have the 200-plus nuclear devices? Do they actually work? Or it's the same neck of the woods. Is it the Saddam thing all over again? I mean, I'm not testing. I'm not saying they got to prove anything. But do they really work? Because you know that's how we came up with the casus belli to run in 2003. He keeps saying he's got these weapons of mass destruction. Well, he was saying it to keep the Iranians at bay. Kind of makes you wonder, doesn't it? Again, not like I want him to prove anything, but...
Well, Is that right?
That's right. Yes.
They don't go, they don't beat around the bush. Are you people with me at
yes,
all?
Yes, we are.
No, no, Jim, you lost us a while back. You lost us when we found out Porter Wagner was dead. But, no, I think I know what he's trying to get to. Because we're making a deal to try to avert nuclear conflagration with Iran. God is mad at us, and he's going to flush us down the toilet like a fetus. Is that, was that it? Sometimes the gift of discernment just ain't all there. As Brother Deacon Asa points out, these bastards sound like they're hammered, Bob. They butcher half the words they spit out. Well, you know, if you check the history, Jim did drink a bit back in the day. Then, of course, you know, they're crazy, but their fairy tales are hysterical as they sit around a table and tell lies. And the poor captive audience. No, no, really, I've got an overactive bladder. I just gotta go to the restroom. No. Ah, you just sit right there. You got the tickets. You take the ride. Nobody leaves till we pass the hat. I made it go away. We're all better now. Oh, what else? Okay, Ron informs me. Bob, they really have the nukes. They were tested originally in Nevada and later using supercomputers starting with the craze. I was never there. You did not hear this from me. Many machines on X. Meanwhile, going back to the lady in East Tennessee who decided that Obama said it was okay to print money, Michael in Madison says, that story about the glued-together printed-out money reminds me of the very first time I saw an episode of Beavis and Butthead many, many years ago. During a primitive time known as the early 90s, Beavis and Butthead used photocopiers to make their own money, paper coins. Butthead, being the relatively more intelligent of the two young men, made many copies of a single quarter, one per sheet. Meanwhile, Beavis was copying a nickel. The cost was 10 cents a copy. Well, see, what we do is we buy eggs in Malta for 4 cents and we sell them in Pianosa for 3 cents and everybody makes a profit. Then they crudely cut the coins from the sheets of paper and headed to the nearest 7-Eleven where they unsuccessfully attempted to buy some nachos. Many criticized the controversial new cartoon show for allegedly having a harmful influence on children. However, I thought there was something oddly ingenious, not to mention hilarious, about the program. Yes, it was. And the movie was awesome, particularly in its early days. It was, of course, the brainchild of Mike Judge, the auteur who later brought us Idiocracy. Didn't Tipper Gore get upset about Beavis and Butthead back in the day? She got upset about a lot. It's hard to keep it all together. Okay, so we got 7 minutes left in the program, and $25 to go to match our $50 challenge on the table. And it looks like now we're going to go into tomorrow evening somewhere around $300 to raise to finish out the week. Okay. Because it was prayer meeting Wednesday and we had so many theological hairs to split last night, I didn't get to Major Garrett. You know, there was a press conference yesterday, and of course the electric TV box was all abuzz with the fact that President Obama stated the obvious: if you give a woman drugs and she doesn't know it, and then you have sex with her, it's rape. Now, there was a lot of brooga-brooga about that. Not quite so much, though, about Major Garrett, who works for CBS now. I remember when he was at Chicken Noodle News. and is, in fact, a dick. Major Garrett. Yeah. Well, here's why he's a dick. Let's go to the audio. This is the question he asked about Iran.
President, as you well know, there are four Americans in Iran, three held on trumped-up charges, according to your administration, and one whereabouts unknown. Can you tell the country, sir, why you are content with all the fanfare around this deal to leave the conscience of this nation and the strength of this nation unaccounted for in relation to these four Americans?
Let's see. I think we need to go to that bold philosopher Jeff Spicoli for commentary on Major Garrett there.
You dick!
Yeah. When did you? So, Mr. President, when did you stop beating your wife? I mean, he's a knower of words. He's a word knower. He knew what he was doing. What he was doing was auditioning for a much better salary over at Fox. Why are you content to leave our people rotting in a stinking Iranian hellhole? Why couldn't you have traded some arms to get our hostages home like St. Ronnie of Raygun did? He was a patriotic American, and he wasn't no Islamo-fascist Kenyan Muslim, you slurper like you! But instead of quoting Jeff Spicoli, the Kenyan Muslim, you slurper, instead took him apart without ever even using a dirty word.
And last week, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff said under no circumstances should there be any relief for Iran in terms of ballistic missiles or conventional weapons. It is perceived that that was a last-minute capitulation in these negotiations. Many in the Pentagon feel you've left the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff hung out to dry. Could you comment?
I got to give you credit, Major, for how you craft those questions. First, the notion that I'm content as I celebrate with American citizens languishing in Iranian jails? Major, that's nonsense.
See, he was struggling. He may be the coolest president we have ever had in the whole history of the greatest country in the world on earth now, today, forever. But he was struggling because he wanted to say, Major, you're a dick. Because he is. Bill Maher tweeted out earlier, Major Garrett is a huge asshole. If you want to strike a nerve with POTUS, why not just scream the N-word? That should get his attention. Oh, they're gonna. One of these days, they're gonna slip up. Just like Bro Fromix did once upon a time, talking about the blah people. And didn't, yeah, but that's right. He called President Obama the, Nig, you remember that. Don't make me play the clip.
And you should know better. I've met with the families of some of those folks. Nobody's content. And our diplomats and our teams are working diligently to try to get them out. Now, if the question is why we did not tie the negotiations to their release.
Uh-oh. Here comes the 11-dimensional chess. It's going to make a surprising amount of sense.
Think of,
or perhaps unsurprising. Depends on whether you're a wingnut tihadi. Whether or not you go home and you've got washer melon tattooed on your across your nipples.
About the logic that creates. Suddenly, Iran realizes, you know what? Maybe we can get additional concessions out of the Americans. By holding these individuals. Makes it much more difficult for us to walk away if Iran somehow thinks that a nuclear deal is dependent in some fashion on the nuclear deal. And, by the way, if we had walked away from the nuclear deal, we'd still be pushing them just as hard to get these folks out. That's why those issues are not connected.
Makes perfect sense, as long as you're not Major Garrett. Or a member of the Tea Party, or a birther, death, or ninth, or tenth, or bagger, booger, eater, bircher, libertarian, republican. It's also time to get out of here. Y'all have a wonderful evening. Thanks for all the help in getting us up and out of the hole. We're not out of it yet, but we are a lot. We can see the top of the heap of dirt. And that is very important indeed. $25 to go to meet the $50 challenge that's on the table. Back for Friday on the Front Porch tomorrow evening. Have a wonderful evening, and we'll talk soon. Got to get out of here, like, right now. And, of course, always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all.